There we go. I can go for it if you. I've got a little one. You know, maybe to give the context of the small reading. It's in page 89 in the French edition, chapter 7, which is called 7 Years, and it's about Daniel's childhood and when he was beaten up or harassed by a big boy at school. It's a really funny and maybe it's a bit sad excerpt to read, and it gave birth to one of my favorite TVP's late songs, which is called "And the Big Boy Came and Knocked Him All Out." I don't know. It's one very very nice track, so I go for it. La première dépression démarre à l'école. Il y a ce gros gars qui l'insulte et le coince à la récré. Il est blond avec un physique d'Américain. Il ressemble à une montagne. Comme dans les films, avec la mâchoire carrée, il s'appelle Big Boy. Il y a les fois où il lui dit juste Tracy the Pussy ou Tracy the Laundry, en référence à l'emploi de sa mère. Tracy la lavette, Tracy la laverie, s'il n'y avait que ça. Le gars ramène maintenant des chaussettes sales et des slips qu'il fourre avec des crottes de chien gluantes. Il les lui jette au visage et Daniel est enveloppé par l'odeur et incapable d'esquiver les chaussettes pleines de merde qui rebondissent sur lui et tombent à ses pieds. « Tu vas me laver ça !» dit Big Boy, éructe en accentuant son expression carnassière. « Brush, brush the laundry !» Il n'y a pas grand monde qui rigole, mais le gars a un ou deux supporters qui font la clape et assistent au spectacle en souriant de peur que l'autre ne s'en prenne à eux. Daniel se retranche, mais le mal est fait, il ne parle plus à personne. Et l'autre l'attend un jour à la sortie de l'école. Daniel ne lui parle jamais, pas plus à lui qu'aux autres. Big Boy sort de nulle part et lui fout son poing dans la gueule. Daniel ne le voit pas venir, il n'a pas le temps de s'enfuir, il voit le poing qui jaillit comme s'il sortait du mur, un poing d'enfant mais puissant comme le vent, l'embuscade est parfaite, il voit le poing et le visage qui maintenant sourit juste derrière lui. Il suit le cours du bras et s'écroule sous l'impact. Daniel perd connaissance une seconde ou deux avant d'être ramené à lui par la douleur qui est contenue dans son nez et bat comme un cœur. Il a l'impression que tout ce qu'il a connu avant est en train de s'échapper et de s'écouler en dehors de lui. Big Boy disparaît mais reste tapi au fond de lui. En 2006, c'est cette sensation exacte de pouvoir être surpris à tout moment par le retour du poing qui s'exprime à travers la chanson la plus explicite que Daniel consacrera à cet épisode. And then a big boy came and knocked it all down. Le grand gars est venu et tout s'est écroulé. Voilà.
Merci beaucoup. Welcome Benjamin Berton in this interview. It's about a book that he has been releasing in 2020 already in French language. It was
January 2020 in French.
The book
Sorry.
Dream World we are
Sorry.
speaking about, and now it's up for release in German language. It's being translated into German language and will be released in the next days in Ventil Verlag, a very nice publisher in Germany. And yeah, I want to talk to Benjamin Berton about the book, how it all came into existence and how he got to know the TV personalities. That's what it's all about. It's a book about the TV personalities and the singer Daniel Treacy. And you have also written other books. You have written several novels, for example, Sauvageon, that was released already in 2000. And yeah, more than 10 other books, as much as I counted right. And in 2020, Dream World ou la vie fabuleuse de Daniel Treacy, a mixture between biographical novel or musical biography about Dan Treacy, his band TV personalities, was released. How did you develop your interest for the television personalities or TV personalities?
Yes, it's my third book, which is translated in German. There were two novels. One, Sauvageon, was translated into Wildlingen at Dumont
a
few years ago, and the second one was named Class Affair, and I don't remember the translation in English, also at Dumont. My taste for the television personality is discovered the band quite late. I'm 46 years old, born 1974, and I've discovered the band in the mid-90s only, so it was way past their glory and way past their beginning. So it was a really, really late interest. I was, and I'm still into British pop. Was very interested by everything which is linked to, you know, Englishness. In general, longitude, which make Britain very particular. My mum she's retired. Was an English teacher. I was raised in the north of France, so I spent many holidays in England. I was always fascinated by pop music, tea, and bowler hats and London and stuff like this. I was very much into Britpop at the beginning, but more than that into the Smiths. And then I came close to everything about England, which was the Kinks, Syd Barrett, early Pink Floyd and things like that. And that's how I discovered the television personalities. And it was really a shock. It was maybe in 1996 or 7. And it was a shock to me because I was totally immersed in, Morrissey's poetry and what the Smiths were singing about English. And I discovered this band and I was really amazed by all the Englishness I found in their lyrics, which was about movies and plays and paintings, and it was all a cultural references I was searching, and I was reading frenetically any references I could find about, maybe we'll talk later about all those, kitchen sink realistic movement in the 60s, 50s, 60s, and 17. And that was what attracted me first. And then, of course, there was the music, which in the beginning was close to what I'd like in music of that time, post-punk music. And we've got a very different kind of sound with the television personalities. There's not that much in common between and Don't the Kids Just Love It, their first LP, and the last ones, which are all Daniel Tracy and his music and himself, really.
Yeah, Daniel Tracy and the TV personalities were masters of references in their songs. There were many references to kitchen sink dramas of the 60s, but also it was very interesting that they had a strong feeling of social realism in their songs, like the bands you mentioned, the Smiths, or for example Pulp. At the time in the mid 90s, they also had this sense of everyday life and strong social realism. Did that attract you also to the music of the TV personalities?
Yes, I've talked about Englishness, but there's a precise originality in their heart, which is very evident in their first record, which is the way they connect to the music of the 60s and 70s. In after the punk movement, there is a kind of tendency to eradicate, the music of the 60s and 70s, and everybody wants to deconstruct, to erase this, and we go into electronic for some or punk music. And what's funny with Daniel Tracy is that he's into old music like Morrissey, and the two characters have really, really many common points, and their love for old musician and British pop music is very interesting. I write in the book about one of the characters which is quite important for Daniel Tracy's stage, which is Joe Meek. Joe Meek was a famous producer, In England in the 60s, in the 70s, in the 60s also, is just like an old Elvis doing a strange production in his kitchen, in his flat, and he produces crooners, you know, brass bands, and many are like is the British Phil Spector, and Daniel Tracy has this guy for a hero, and he's got a wonderful and tragic story behind, and we can feel in this in the TVP's music all this love for this kind of music. And it's very interesting as he tries to connect to English pop music history, whereas all or many of his contemporaries are trying to break any references to this this part. And of course, there's also the character of Syd Barrett, which is very important. And Syd Barrett at the time in the 80s, it's not very popular in British rock music, and the television personalities have reconciliated the punk heritage and the British 70s music pop heritage. And that was, to me, what makes them very important.
Yeah, that's a funny thing that Daniel Tracy came up with all this in the beginning of punk in 1977. They released their first single with the song 14th Floor, for example, on it. And no, maybe for those who don't know the TV personalities, how did they start London 1977? How did it all begin with them?
It's a funny story. It's nothing but a school story, indeed. They all live, and Daniel Tracy lives in Chelsea, and is around 18 at the time of the punk explosion. Is really at the epicenter of London at that time. His mother is holding, is managing a laundry, which is called World's End Laundry, which is fun, near the BBC studios, you know, and she washes many celebrities' clothes, Led Zeppelin's clothes, Bob Marley's clothes in this area. And Daniel, as a kid, is trying to do some deliveries for his mother, and he's going to college just over there in Chelsea. And his friend with Jordan is one of the most famous punk, who was working as a clerk, as a shop seller, you know, at Malcolm's McLaren shop sex, which is the famous place when punk is born. So they are in this they are born during the swinging London, and they are there at the age of punk, and the first television personalities lineup is composed of Dan Tracy, of Ed Ball, which is a long-time companion of him, and two brothers, which are John and Gerard Bennett. And we also have quite soon someone who takes the bass, who is very important for the book and for Daniel Tracy, which is Joe Foster. And Joe Foster will be a very important producer, working with Alan McGee at Creation. He's the guy who produced the first Jesus and Mary Chain record, you know. So he's part of a television personality. And at the time, they have a 16, 17, 18-year-old. And they read an article in the magazine which says, hey, people, you can record a single for £2. So Daniel asked his father with working on the street as a, you know, a street worker, man street, I don't know the exact translation, and his father pays him for his first single, and they record 14th Floor in just one session in August 1977. It has a bit of airplay, and they're notably played by John Peel at the time, who is this famous and already at that time famous DJ. And it takes them another year to record another, which is one of his their best song, which is called "Where's Bill Grundy Now." And on that second EP, there is a second track, which is called Part-Time Punks, who is a kind of a funny track about all bourgeoisie coming to become punks. You know, it's a very ironical song about everybody wanting to wear clothes and like punks, painting their hair green. And this particular track, Part-Time Punks, gets a lot of airplay with John Peel, and they sell a few thousand of it from Dan's Kitchen. That's the beginning of a story.
Yeah, a great single. You need to listen to it. And yeah, Dan Treacy was also quite young at the time. He was 17 years old, I think, when the first single appeared. And yeah, a bit later and very important for Germany was then also their first record, and Don't the Kids Just Love It, that did appear in January 1981. It was a very important record. Also, it got some important fans here in German magazines, like in Sounds at that time, and the German fans were also taking notice of this new band. And how do you remember first listening to And Don't the Kids Just Love It, and what was your impression first listening to it?
It was really a shock for me. I was, as I said, it was way long after the record, because I've listened to it closely in the mid-90s. So it's a late discovery for me, but it was really a shock, because it's... for me, you've got the sound of a kind of ironical Joy Division with the intelligence of Morrissey's lyrics, and it was real shock, because the record is so good, it's so perfect. We've got everything I wanted at that time: the social anger, which is very very evident, very punk energy, but also a sense of melody with totally amazing, and there are wonderful stories. There's sadness on songs like "A Word of Pauline Lewis" or "A Family Affair." It's really full of wit, full of irony, full of sadness, anger, of references. There is a song which links once again them to the Smiths, which is called "A Picture of Dorian Gray." He's got the same taste as Morrissey for Oscar Wilde and those things. It's really a record which is so English, so punk, so pop. It's really a pleasure. There are eight singles which are incredible. "Silly Girl" is a fantastic song about a girl who is going away from home, and it's quite a perfect record, really. It's their best record. Historically, it's the best. We can find many other things in other record, but objectively, this one is really a masterpiece, as the other have other qualities, really. But this one is the more coherent and the more intelligent in any point.
And it was on Rough Trade Records.
There's also this
important label.
This amazing cover we must notice with Twiggy and Patrick McNee, which is, of course, the best cover record.
And how did it all start for you? When did it come this idea to your mind to write a book about the TV personalities? And what was the starting point for your research? Because you must have then thought about, how to research all these gaps in the history. I mean, there are the records of the TV personalities, but then there are also some gaps in between the years 1984 and 1989 and so on there. How did it start for you, and how did you try to research more about it?
My research started backwards, from nowadays to the past. And as a novel writer, I was interested by the story of Daniel Tracy, and I considered writing a book about them because I'm also, for something like 25 years or even 30 years, a music reviewer for a website, a few magazines, etc. I've always been into music, but as a novel writer, I never had written a full book about music. I've read thousands or hundreds of music bios, about everyone. Almost, I'm quite obsessed by music bios in my readings, and it was a choice to write about TVPs because nobody had ever, except one German writer, had written a short book, a short essay about them.
In the early 90s, I think.
And there was nothing written about them, so it was something which interested me. I could have written, I've talked much about Morrissey and the Smiths, but what could I say which hadn't been written about them? So it was trying to find a good subject, and television personality is a good subject. I was on a mission, really, for me to try and help people discover their music, and it was one of the best individual stories I knew. It's fascinating because it starts like a fairy tale. As I said, their first single was a really hit. Part-time punk brings full of hope of success. Daniel is a young boy, he's very talented. They've got a strong band. They could be as big as the Beatles. And it ends tragically. It hasn't totally ended. But Daniel had a very serious collapse incident in 2011, and he's since then at the hospital in a care unit, and he can't play the guitar, he can't see anything, he can't, he's very diminished. So it's a real tragedy with drugs and with, as you say, a full 5 year or 6 year eclipses. He was imprisoned, he was beaten, it disappeared. So it was a really like a, thriller to try to see what he had done through a few periods, notably between 1998 and 2004. Nobody knows what he has done, and I tried to tell about this, to say how is it possible? He's like a guy who has fallen into a black hole for a while, and then he resurrects and he composes a few very good records. So it's like a Greek tragedy, he's really a high life character. And it was quite evident for me to write about him and to make this Dream World book my first rock and roll and maybe only book about music,
And did you try to get in contact then with people who knew him? How did you do it?
Yeah, I've interviewed Daniel myself close to, it was in 2009. I've just met him personally once, physically. I've seen the band three times in concert, but I've only talked to him for something like 10 minutes in 2009 when they played in Paris with a band. After the gig, and then I had at the same time, a bit later, just before his accident, we did an email interview, which I still have beside me, which quite funny and sad, because he was answering directly to my question in capital letters from a computer at a friend's, and it's quite a moving interview, because it's very sad and very depressed and very lucid in at the same time. But it was the first real connection I had to him. And for the book, I've interviewed something like 20 or 30 people. I asked questions to his sister, to many past members. The most important for the book were Joe Foster, were Joe Head, were maybe the most important for all the story was Alison Wonderland Wivers, which was his girlfriend, and who drew many TV piece covers. And I've interviewed David Musker, David Newton, a few producers such as Phil Vinyl, and really, really thousands of people who knew them. Each page of this book is mostly based on an interview, and I've tried to transform those interviews into real life scenes from imagination. And sometimes, of course, when I had no information, or when I wanted no information sometimes about drug, it wasn't something that interests me to paint how bad Daniel was. I invented things up. And it's so the book is 80% truth and 20% legend for me.
Yeah, that's nice. We spoke already about the lyrics of Daniel Treacy and his band TV Personalities, and the lyrics are full of references to movies, to pop cultural, to other books, for example, to Oscar Wilde. And I can imagine it was also part of a quite fun thing to follow all those traces that are in the lyrics. How did you do it? Did you watch a lot of movies for research also?
I cheated a bit. I'm very into those movies, and I already had seen most of the movies he referenced, such as Look Back in Anger with Richard Burton, A Taste of Honey. Once again, it's one of Morrissey's favorite films, so I had already explored this. There's also another one which is quite famous, which is Kes, with from Ken Loach, the guy, the little kid with a hawk. Maybe you've seen that one. There are thousands of them. The Loneliness of a Long Distance Runner, or Billy Liar, Saturday Night and Sunday Morning. I was really immersed in that culture of what we call kitchen sink realism. It's really my thing. So I've seen them. I've before, and I've reviewed them a few at the time. I cheated because there is also a very good online source which is a website called A Day in Heaven, which is the official and unofficial television personalities website, and they've got all the references, song by song, films, paintings referenced and listed on their website. So I used this website to complete my collection, really.
Yeah, I saw A Taste of Honey, one of the favorite films of Dan Treacy, for the first time today, and I was very impressed by this realism and by the black and white pictures of it. Mm-hmm. And that's also a connection to a fictional figure in your book. You bring it back to life, Geoffrey Ingram, who also is known as part of a song of the TV personalities on their first record. And also, how I said, part of a play and a film by Shelley Delaney, who invented this figure, so to say. Mm-hmm. And who was this Geoffrey Ingram, and what did it all mean to Dan Treacy that he decided to makes a song out of it?
Geoffrey is a character from Shelley Delaney's play, as you said, Taste of Honey. It's a very interesting play because Shelley Delaney wrote it as she was only 19. She's a playwright from Salford, close to Manchester. Salford is where are born Peter Rook from New Order. Morrissey is close to there, and there's also Marky Smith from the Fall. So Shelley Delaney comes from there. She was 19 when she wrote this piece, this play, which presents a 17-year-old girl named Jo, who lives in poverty with her mother, who is close to nymphomania, and Jo is in love with a black American sailor, and she gets pregnant, and of course the sailor is going away, and Geoffrey Ingram shares the rent with her when she goes into a flat, a boarding hotel, and Geoffrey is a kind of a very fascinating character. He's an art student who is at the same time some kind of a friend to her, but also a father figure. And Geoffrey is very ambiguous because we all know that he's probably gay, and it's quite rare at the time to have such a character who's very mannered, and the play is from the end of the 50s. It's 1958, and it's one of Dan Treacy's favorite movies. And why he did a song about this particular character is because he found Geoffrey the perfect embodiment of Englishness. It was to him what England looks like. It looks like Geoffrey Ingram, a gay art student with no money. And at the end of the play, I'm not going to tell you all about this play or this movie, but Geoffrey is living alone, and we don't see him after. At the end, he leaves Joe and is going away as a friend to protect her in some sort of way. And it's a very funny character. He's very intelligent. And what's funny with Daniel Treacy, apart from this very song, which is a very intelligent, witty song, is that all all along his life, Daniel will sign many of his letters and notes and diaries, entries by the name of Jeffrey Ingram. So I've used that very detail, which is true, to make him a sort of alter ego of Daniel through his life, because during 40 years, Daniel identified himself to the figure of Jeffrey Ingram, which is in the song is the luckiest man on earth, which is not really what he is in the movie, but Daniel sees him as a kind of a lucky character, someone who's got all qualities, you know.
He always gets out as it starts to rain. You also invent him somehow for a third time. The first time he was invented in when the play was written, then the second time when Dan Treacy wrote the song, and you have now a third time invented somehow Jeffrey Ingram, and he also plays a specific role in your book. Somehow he is older now. You write the future of Jeffrey Ingram, so to say.
It was really interesting, as Daniel always identified to him. I've tried to use the fictive character as a friend, a sort of confessor, and he was. I imagine he had got older and older, of course, and had always talked to Daniel, and I've imagined how he had followed him in his tragic life all along, and we have got I've used it as a novel character to make the story to tie the story and to mix things about him, because I really think he's a central character in the TVP's work. Jeffrey is the character in the song is all Daniel will never be. He's a lucky guy. He's a guy who has all successes, who doesn't have to work really to be rich, to be elegant, and it's really a good counterpoint to what happens to Daniel.
A great fascination was also the Velvet Underground and, for example, Nico and the TVPs. They met, or even Ico, in the early 80s in Berlin, I think. Mm-hmm. Can you tell about that?
Yes, there's a full chapter on that. And one of the first gigs in Germany with the TVPs, they are opening for Nico. And it's quite fun. Maybe I don't want to spoil this scene too much, but we've got those kids coming from England, going in a foreign country for what seems to be the first time. And you can imagine 18-year-old boys in a band playing away for the first time. And they're waiting in the lobby, and then there's Nico is coming. So nobody dares to talk to her. Nobody dares even look at her. And Nico is playing with musicians who are flying also from England as a side band. You know, they've been hired by the label to play with Nico, and none of his musicians dares to talk to her and get introduced to her. So there's one of the TVPs, which is now a famous Hollywood film star, Mark Empire, who dares to raise, and he sits down close to Nico. Everybody's saying, "Oh, Nico, it's Nico." And then he gets friendly to her. He drinks tea with her, and what's funny that is Mark spends the rest of the day scoring and getting stoned with Nico, and that's how it starts. And they, after that, they play a second gig, and they compose a song for Nico, and they play a Velvet cover, and it's very funny story about the early TVPs.
Now back maybe to the popularity of the TV personalities. They were always quite popular in Germany, but never really famous. And they never became bigger than the Beatles in England and Great Britain. How famous were they in France, the TV personalities?
Totally unknown. No, there's no TVP cult yet in France. They haven't played much there. Though their first gig was organized in Tours by one famous to be journalist who was quite famous in France and who was very important for French number one indie rock magazine named Les Inrecuptibles. But that was mostly the only notable gig they did in France, and they played later on a few times, but Germany was definitely the place where they've been the most and where they were the biggest.
So it's a good thing that now your book is up to being released. Benjamin Berton, Dreamworld, oder Vom fabelhaften Leben des Dan Treacy und seiner Band Television Personalities im Ventil Verlag wird in den nächsten Tagen veröffentlicht werden. And now back maybe to the present time and the other books you are you have released. There are two new novels which go a bit into the vein of Jules Verne and like adventure books, L'Île Merveilleuse and Les Clubs de Timbre. What are those new books of you about?
Oh, it's a really classical French novel, not totally, but L'Île Merveilleuse was translated into English, its name of Floating Island, I guess. It's about ecology, you know, people founding a floating island next to the African coasts because the world is too polluted to live. It says some kind of, you know, like Kevin Costner, Waterworld, you know, the movie Waterworld with Kevin Costner. That's a kind of a fable like this site. Scientifical novel, and Le Club des Timbres is a teen novel. So it's there's a bit of music and rock and roll in it, but it's very different from Dreamworld, really.
Yeah. Also, maybe they are will be translated into German language at some point in time. And now maybe back to the German translation of your book. Will it also be released? Will you come to Germany, or will there be a releasing party like the release party in 2020 with Joe Head and a real concert?
We haven't talked about it yet, but it could be a good idea. The conditions are not that good for, organizing such things. I don't know how it is. Yeah, I know a little bit how it is in Germany, and we've got the same situation in France. But Joey Head and the former members of Television Personalities are ready to travel in Germany anytime. It would be quite easily to organize something. There's nothing on the agenda, but maybe in 2022 we may contemplate it. Really.
Yeah, when COVID-19 is over in 2025, maybe again. Okay, thanks a lot, Benjamin Berton, author of the book Dreamworld. And do you have any other things planned into that direction of the book Dreamworld, or what are you writing at the moment? Do you have plans for new novels?
I'm working on something completely different about, it could interest German taste, because it's about Handball. It's a tragedy in the Handball world in France. It's a kind of, un fait divers about Handball. Yeah. Because my kids are playing Handball, and I'm also a great Handball fan. A very keel supporter, it will be settled in the Handball environment.
Okay, great. Okay.
The pitch is not totally ready now.
We will see. Okay, thanks a lot for the interview, and we will stay in contact when the concert with Joe Head will be planned in 2025.
Thank you. Merci beaucoup.